This is Mouth Media Network. Amplify and connect.
Hi, my name is Izzy Finnegan, and I'm the search and user experience lead for the U.S. market of Unilever. What I love about beauty is that it doesn't only make you feel good, but it's also an outlet for self-care and a time to indulge yourself a little bit.
In this ever-changing digital-centric world, e-commerce is more important to beauty brands than ever. You'll hear from a digital native beauty executive on successfully running e-commerce from indie brands to beauty behemoths, the challenges and triumph of combining mass and prestige beauty e-commerce, and the future of individually tailoring digital consumer shopping experiences to drive sales.
From New York City, you're listening to Beauty is Your Business, covering the intersection of innovation and business in the beauty industry.
Welcome, Izzy. We're so excited to have you here.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, guys.
I'm here with Abby Wallach.
Hi, April.
And we're excited to get into an interesting conversation with Izzy. First, obviously, you are digitally native in the beauty industry. Tell us how you got into that area and sort of the path that you've taken thus far to bring you to this position at Unilever.
Yeah, so I have a little bit of an unconventional story. I actually started my career in psychology. I went to Columbia and got my master's in clinical psychology with some emphasis on PTSD and child and family relationships. From there, I went to Bellevue Hospital and I was working in the emergency room doing some PTSD studies, which was a little crazy. You see some wild things there in the Bellevue emergency room. But during that time, I was working at Jet as a contractor, actually in the HR department, just to get some money while I was in grad school, while I was doing these studies, and just kind of fell in love with e-commerce. So after I got my degree, I decided to stay at Jet and transferred over to the retail department. They were quick growing. They were starting up the categories. And then, you know, my love for digital and e-commerce kind of grew from there.
Amazing. And how did you get into beauty specifically within e-commerce?
Yeah, so when I was starting out, any category was kind of up for grabs. I was one of the first retail employees there. But I've always just had a really strong passion for beauty. I like how, you know, you can kind of make it your own. There's so many different areas you can go into. If you're really into cosmetics and makeup, that's just so different from, you know, skincare or hair care. And I really gravitated towards the skincare, you know, self-care kind of area. So I just started, you know, showing my expertise and my knowledge in that industry and really was able to grow a really fruitful and large category on the Jet.com platform.
Awesome. And how you mentioned that when Jet was acquired by Walmart, you helped facilitate both mass and prestige beauty brands being part of that mix. How did that come about and what was your role in that?
Yeah, so when Jet was acquired by Walmart found, we were just starting out the prestige beauty category on Jet, and Walmart, you know, kind of saw the numbers that we were getting there, our margins there, you know, the interest that customers were given. And we started having some really interesting conversations about, you know, where she's shopping and what kind of products she's shopping. So doing some customer research, we saw that, you know, she's not just shopping prestige or just shopping mass products. She's shopping maybe a Maybelline mascara with a La Mer cream. And there's really nowhere in the market that kind of offers that full breadth of beauty brands to choose from. So we thought, you know, let's be that place in the market. Let's really own the mass categories as well as the prestige categories with one unified experience. So it was a little difficult to start going out to prestige brands and pitch to them that Walmart is now going to be a prestige beauty destination.
Right.
So there was a lot of convincing on our end, a lot of, you know, working with the brands to really work out how the aesthetic of our brand pages would look, how they would look different from the mass beauty pages, would even look different from the grocery pages that were on Walmart and Jet. And it was really a collaborative effort. I mean, they knew some things we didn't know, we knew some things they didn't know, and we kind of worked together to build this little more elevated high-end experience on the Jet and Walmart platform, you know, with the help of some influencers as well. And as we started getting more and more brands on board, they saw their competitors on board, and it kind of spiraled from there to having, you know, some really large brands, a lot of selection across all categories in beauty.
So let me ask you, when you started, this is what year did that happen? When was that merger or acquisition?
Yeah, so that was, I think it was 2016. So we started pitching for the prestige beauty category right away. You know, we made a list, and at that time we had a really small prestige beauty team. It was myself and just two other people, you know, spanning across all of categories. So we made a list of like 200 top prestige beauty brands and just spent weeks and weeks pitch calling them, you know, getting feedback on what kind of things they'd like to see on the site, what kind of things they wouldn't like to see, you know, how we should build out these prototypes. And we got a lot of yeses, we got a lot of no's, but with those yeses, just kind of use that information to make our story better and our platform even better.
So as you were building, as the brand started coming onto the platform, now you were starting to see mass and prestige together. So how did you manage that in a way to speak to the consumer? Because it really was, I think that was maybe one of the very first companies to have that high-low in beauty, per se, unless it was like more of a prestige retailer. I don't know. Maybe was it the first one?
I mean, in my opinion, it was the first to have such a wide breadth of assortment because we really had everything from like the $1, you know, Wet n Wild like eyeliner to like $400 night creams. It really was the entire breadth. But that's a great question. We did a lot of consumer research to see how we can co-mingle the mass category with the prestige beauty category in a way that didn't, you know, downgrade the prestige beauty category or elevate mass in a way that just didn't seem authentic. So how we decided was within the taxonomy, we would have one place where everything was housed. And then separately, we'd have like a specialty prestige shop where it was much more editorial focused, much more, you know, high-end pictures, a lot of white space, a lot of clean lines. We use a lot more models for imagery. We had some more, you know, branding pieces associated with it instead of just promotion, selling, discounts on the mass side.
So did you start to see the numbers grow as you were merging and converging the high-low?
Yeah, so we were able to increase what we called like the basket size of customers because we were able to kind of persuade them to buy cross categories and buy, you know, these high and low products together. And the prestige beauty category was actually growing quite quickly, that we were growing on pace with some of our larger categories like electronics and things that have, you know, much more higher price points. And, you know, a lot of people are shopping online. So that just got us more excited and kind of opened up more doors for funding and for support and for additional brands to come on board. And, you know, we really took it from there. We got more support from the Walmart organization. We got more resources and kind of grew what we were able to do.
And did the growth happen almost immediately, or was it, you know, like a process, the integration as the prestige and mass were integrated?
Yeah.
Or was it pretty quick and like just worked seamlessly?
Yeah. I mean, a little of both. Being in a startup, it was quite fast, but being under the Walmart umbrella, we did have to get, you know, certain things approved. We did have to work cross collaboratively quite a bit with many different teams. So in some areas, we were able to grow and execute very fast. In other areas, it took some more time when we had to work across multiple functions. But I mean, I thought the growth was quite quick.
And what were the biggest challenges or, I guess, successes working with the different brands? Obviously, it's a huge spectrum of brands from, you know, like you said, your $1 eyeshadow to your $400 night cream. Were there certain challenges that came up with any, you don't have to name the brand, but any specific thing that stands out to you?
Yeah. So one thing that we were always pretty much challenged with was the gray market of the prestige beauty space. So brands were really concerned if we went onto the Walmart platform and we're distributing like, you know, so largely, how are we sure that our brand equity is safe? How are we sure that our branding is safe? How are we sure that you guys aren't selling to diverters or anything like that? Mm-hmm. So we had to take a lot of steps to ensure that, you know, we're an extension of their brand, and we want to preserve all of that as well. We want to preserve their pricing. We want to make sure our customers have this great experience. So one thing that we do, and we made an agreement with all of our prestige brands, was when they come on board with us as a first-party seller, we'll take down any of their three-party listings. So that really helps manage the whole market because of Walmart being one of the biggest online distributors.
How can you do that? How can you take it down?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's at will how we want to have the third party markets on the Walmart platform. And I know this is something that Amazon's luxury beauty department is doing as well. But as long as we have a steady inventory flow from them and we have, you know, all of the content that we need from them, we have all of the new SKUs that we need from them, like we're really open to the whole assortment. It really helps us to streamline our site to look more elevated. Instead of searching, you know, this one particular product and you see four or five different listings, you don't know which one's from the manufacturer, you don't know which one's from a gray market. And then also with our one-party listings, we were able to offer two-day shipping. So it's a better overall user experience. Yeah. So for us, it was great. And for them, it was great. They were able to control one large piece of the market.
Did they ever think of bringing Jet into the store as a in-store experience?
No. So, I mean, Jet was positioned a little differently than Walmart, and they had a different customer base. So Jet was more the urban millennial, you know, wasn't able to get to the store. Mm. And Walmart was a little more, let's reach across the entire United States. Yeah, yeah. So no in to that question, but sort of yes, because they did use some of the Jet talent to create some new user experiences within the store. There are some other companies, you know, that were founded within the Walmart umbrella that kind of look into artificial intelligence and virtual reality and how to integrate into that store to make it a more seamless experience. So there's, you know, tons of really cool things that are happening there.
Mm, interesting.
Just back to the integration of the mass and prestige on the site. Okay. Were you finding more that it was mass shoppers who were, you know, native to Walmart.com that were converting and purchasing prestige products there? Or did you find that the prestige shoppers who were searching for their prestige brands were then landing on Walmart?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's funny. It depends.
Or a little bit of both.
Yeah. It was a little bit of both. But we did some interesting things to get more customers acquired to the prestige beauty world. Like we played more in the Google space. We did more, you know, media buys and things like that, which makes more sense with this higher price point item because your return is positive. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, the mass space, they weren't really able to indulge in those kinds of things because they were losing money on every sale at that point if they're spending all of their money on the media buys. So, I mean, I think the loyal Walmart customers would maybe be like, wow, didn't know you guys had a luxury space. Like, maybe I'll start kind of shopping here. But then some people that were shopping just prestige products were like coming from online and didn't know, you know, we were able to carry all of this different breadth of stuff and convert it in that way. So it was a little bit of both.
Interesting. And I wonder if there was any pushback, you know, of like people who are used to buying their Chanel mascara at Nordstrom and we're like, well, why would I buy that from Walmart? You know what I mean?
Definitely a little bit because Walmart matches the lowest price on the market online. Uh-huh. So that's Chanel mascara. If you're buying it at Macy's or Bergdorf or whatever, maybe it's $125 or something like that, whatever it is. You know, if we have that listing on Amazon and we're scraping that pricing, it could be much lower. It could be $80. It could be something like that. So,
right. So the discounting helps.
Yeah. And there were some skeptics that were like,
I would be a little skeptical to see prestige. Well, beauty is known for never discounting ever. It's only recently in the past few years where you've seen these deals come around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
From what I know.
Yeah. There were some skeptics for sure. And definitely more towards the beginning of the launch of this. But as we kind of got some more background and, you know, people started trusting us a bit more, we did collaborations with these brands. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty apparent that they were supplying directly to us just based on the content we had.
Right. You could tell that it was authentic and it was secure.
Yeah. And the brands didn't love the discounting. So we would work with them to do it at a cadence that made sense and kind of showed them, look at all of these new customers you're able to acquire and introduce to your brand, but you're not actually diluting your brand because these discounts aren't happening on your site. They're not happening at, you know, these brick and mortar stores. They're happening under Walmart, which people are already expecting to get this.
Right.
Some
and
sort
it's a
of
different
discount.
Customer because they were reaching a whole other world of.
Yeah. So once we showed them those numbers of like the acquisition of these customers and, you know, the impressions and the growth that they were able to see, they felt much better about it.
Sure. I'm sure.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I think now we'll take a little moment to have what we call snack time, a tradition on this show. Our guests often bring us a snack for everyone to share. It's a great way to break bread and get to know our guests a little bit more. So, Izzy, tell us what you brought and why you brought it with you.
So I brought the chocolate chip walnut cookies from Levain Bakery. Have either of you ever heard of Levain?
Yes.
Yes.
They are so, so dangerous and amazing.
They're addicting. But I'm an Upper West Sider, and it's, you know, an Upper West Side location that they launched there. So whenever I go to a party or a dinner party or
you're like,
you know,
the
anything,
favorite person.
Yeah. Yeah. Birthdays in the office. I'm like, ooh, I know what I'll bring.
Yes. So everyone's like, I'm always going to invite Izzy and she will bring the cookies.
Exactly. Wow. So we can break these out.
Mm. Well, we're going to enjoy this snack. And coming up, you'll hear Izzy talk more about the next chapter of her career and how she's making innovations in the digital e-commerce space.
Entreprenista. A woman who organizes and operates a business, taking on greater than normal financial risks in order to do so.
One who has a drive, passion, and vision with an undying determination to succeed.
She is fiercely motivated, ambitious, and competitive, forging her own path to independence and success.
That's an entreprenista.
Through the conversations on the Entreprenista podcast, we want to celebrate failures, reflect on successes, and get unfiltered about what it takes to be your own boss. This is the Entreprenista podcast, presented by Socialfly.
It's the best business meeting you'll ever have, with must-hear real-life looks at how leading women in business are getting it done.
And what it takes to build and grow a successful company. It's beyond the gram.
With no filters,
no limits, and plenty of surprises. Check out all our latest episodes at entreprenistapodcast.com.
So, Izzy, in between your current job and your first job, you worked briefly at an indie beauty brand. Can you tell us what that was like versus working at these huge, you know, conglomerates that are, you know, that encompass a lot of categories and then honing in specifically on beauty at an indie brand?
Yeah, definitely. So after the acquisition with Walmart, I wanted to move more towards a smaller brand where I had a lot more ownership. So I was always, you know, a beauty shopper and loved the way the Korean beauty market was going. They were innovative, you know, they were, I think it's 12 years ahead of the US market is what some research is saying. So, you know, and definitely in skincare, which I gravitated more towards. So I was an avid shopper of Peach and Lily and just reached out to the founder and her husband and was like, listen, I love e-commerce. I love beauty. Like, let me come and help you. So we met and quickly I transitioned over there to be our head of e-commerce and digital marketing. Awesome. So I really ran the entirety of the e-commerce platform, all of our, you know, marketing, what the layout of the website looked like, what the functionality of the website looked like, what our advertisements were going to be, you know, really end to end.
Wow, that's incredible. So, and how did you take that experience sort of more like from the ground up at essentially a startup and transition that into a super huge consumer products company like Unilever?
Yeah. So I think working at a startup, you learn a lot of things about yourself and a lot of things about the industry. So, you know, working at Jet definitely helped craft that. And then again, at Peach and Lily, I was really focused on, you know, the ways to drive the business and the ways to be agile and to move quickly to be able to keep up with the market. So I wanted to transition into a role that's a little bit, you know, larger, and I could kind of have more, you know, more ownership across a whole large organization like Unilever. And so I joined their e-commerce team and I really focused on, you know, using data to drive my decisions there. And that was something that I saw the e-commerce team was really honing in on. We didn't just make, you know, rash assumptions and testing and learning kind of things that we thought would work out. We really, you know, tapped into different data sources to make sure that our hypotheses had some sort of backing behind them to really drive action there.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah, like what kind of, like how, where would you even begin with that? Like what kind of hypotheses? I'm just,
yeah, so how would that
start?
Yeah, I can give a few examples. My role at Unilever, I focus on what the user experience is going to be and what the search results are going to be for across our entire category and really on all of our retailers. So some things that I, you know, can look at is how can we create a holistic search plan where we can, you know, facilitate the customer experience at the point in which they're in their journey to the right landing pages. So take Google, for example. If you're Googling, you know, Dove products, you don't really know what you're looking for. Maybe you just want to know what the brand Dove has. Maybe you want to know, you know, do they have personal wash? Do they have, you know, shampoo and conditioner? Do they have lipstick? I don't know. I want to learn more about the brand. So we'll identify certain keywords and understand what the intent of is that search and drive them towards maybe our dovebrand.com. And on that brand.com, you can't necessarily, you can purchase products, but it's a little more difficult to get to that purchasing experience. It's more about branding. It's more about education. Mm-hmm. It's more about, you know, learning about the brand, learning about the story behind the brand. And then, you know, take another search example. If you searched Dove Go Wash Cucumber Body Wash, you know what you want. You're looking for it. You want to just purchase it at that point. So what retailer would make the most sense to drive you towards, and what product page can we drive you to facilitate that conversion as quickly as we can? So we're really thinking through the holistic searching plan there and how we can really help, you know, elevate it for the customer and help facilitate them towards conversion eventually.
And how do you go about, I mean, do you do this on a product by product basis? Is it more category within a brand based, or how does that work? Because you mentioned that specific body wash, you know, as you know, there are hundreds and hundreds of SKUs in some of the brands in the portfolio. So what is the approach for that?
Yeah, so we have a process where we're able to scale it. We'll first run some tests in different brands across different categories, because as you guys know, we have, you know, beauty, food and refreshments, home care. So some of these, you know, hypotheses don't work for certain categories and they do work for others. So we do a lot of testing and learning first. And then from that, we'll create, you know, a scalable process where, and we have a lot of help. We have a lot of teams that have their hands in this, or, you know, different projects like this. But we'll create a scalable process where we can kind of roll this out across all of the different brands across the organization and really help to support various retailers.
When you're doing that, how do you think, do you do it focused on demographics? Like, how do you, so let's say you're driving sales towards, I don't know, where does Unilever sell their products? Everywhere, I assume.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Yeah, Amazon, so, Target,
okay,
Walmart.
So it's Target. How are you specifically getting them to Target?
Yeah.
How does that process work?
Yeah. So, I mean, one thing that drew me to Unilever, and I actually, it's funny, when I was at Jet, I would always talk to one of my old managers and say, one day I want to work at Unilever. And the reason why we kind of all said that was they think differently and they support their retailers differently. I always saw my Unilever contact when I was at Jet and Walmart to be kind of an extension of us. And they were really more brand agnostic, I would say. They really wanted to support our business and, you know, rise the water, and then they just, you know, float up with us. They wanted to kind of ride that coattail instead of just really pushing their products. So that's how I came into the role also. I want to support each of the retailers' jobs to be done. And we're working directly with our retailers on these. And, you know, we're sharing data to make sure that these pilots are as fruitful as they possibly can be. And we're really there to help their business grow, because when their business grows, our business grows.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
And how much do you find that when people are searching, especially for a specific product, that price is really what drives them to a certain website versus another? I mean, obviously, very few people convert to a page 2 on a Google search. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, and obviously whatever's at the top of the page, they're going to tend to go for first. But how much do you find that people say, oh, well, Walmart has it for $1 less than Target, so I'm going to pick that one? Or do you find that people have allegiance to certain retailers where they might have an account and they're like, oh, I'm already shopping at Walmart, so I'm going to put everything in my cart or Target?
Yeah.
How does that?
That's a great question.
Out?
So it's a little of both also. We have certain segments of customers that are, you know, only looking into the price, and that's really all they care about, and they will create another account to get that extra dollar savings. Mm-hmm. And we have all the data on who those people are, how to target those people, and that's exactly what we'll do. We'll target those people and we'll make sure that they're getting the experience that they expect and they should be getting to really make their online shopping experience as fruitful as we possibly can.
And you found through your research and your data that it really helps empower the community to stay loyal. Because loyalty is such a hard thing today, right? Most mm-hmm. people are not really as loyal as they once were because there's so many new things to try.
Yeah.
And you only have so much cash to spend. So
yeah,
it's interesting the way you're going about it.
Definitely. I mean, we definitely want to make sure that people are, able to shop where they want to shop. So we want to meet them where they are and make sure that we're serving them that appropriate experience as best as we possibly can.
It's never boring, sounds like.
Definitely not boring.
It's a big job.
Very exciting job. In this ever-changing digital world. So coming up, we'll get a little bit more personal with you, Izzy, with a round of what we call hitting the pan.
Awesome.
After this.
Here comes Makeup in Los Angeles, the only and unique B2B makeup event at your doorstep. The next edition, February 11th and 12th in Los Angeles at the LA Convention Center. Makeup in Los Angeles is a unique place where you can find from alpha to omega every piece of a makeup and skincare product and make your own line, advised and guided by the savoir-faire of the most qualified experts in the beauty industry. Whatever your project is, there you can find the best contact. You can ask for an invitation at the show's website, makeup-in-losangeles.com.
And now, it's Hitting the Pan.
Okay, Izzy, it's time for Hitting the Pan when we get to the deeper layers of who our guest is. To determine the order of who asks the questions, as usual, we give the proverbial salon chair a spin and see who it lands on. Let's spin the chair, and the first question goes to me. So you are obviously a digitally native person in your career. So I'm curious as to what brick-and-mortar store or stores you love shopping in, since you're an e-com gal.
So, I mean, I definitely, like, love beauty. Uh-huh. So I would say I love going to – and I like natural beauty.
Uh-huh.
I gravitate towards that. So I would say Credo Beauty.
Oh, cool.
I like to go there to discover new brands, indie brands, new products, new product formats. And I like going to the store versus shopping online because – I really want to test that product. I really want to smell that product. And I have really sensitive skin. I want to make sure it bodes well on my skin. And the whole experience is just really delightful.
Nice and relaxing.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
But, you know, getting to test and see. Sometimes when you – I find that I love to shop in stores when I don't know exactly what I'm looking for.
Mm.
And then you're like, oh, I just want to discover something, you know?
Exactly. You're going for that discovery piece.
Yeah.
You know, just to learn a little bit more about the industry or what kind of products are out there.
Love that.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, let's spin the salon chair one more time, and it lands on Abby.
Okay, Izzy. So you have such an intense job, and it sounds like you know so much about that world and digital and commerce. What does Izzy do for fun outside of the computer?
So the little fun time that is available. So another fun fact about me, I minored in art in college. So I really like to, after staring at spreadsheets and algorithms and all that kind of stuff, I really like to tap into the creative side of my brain a bit. So I paint, I sculpt, I draw. And in our apartment in the Upper West Side, I actually have a whole wall of everything that I've kind of created over the past couple years.
Wow, that's awesome.
So it's time to kind of like turn your brain off, put some music on, and really just like
disconnect.
Get a little dirty and, you know, create something.
Fun.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really what I try to do when I have some downtime.
Love that.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, at this point in the show, we offer our guests the chance to reflect back on our conversation and offer a final thought, and then also share with our listeners how they can connect with you, whether it's on LinkedIn, Instagram, whatever you prefer. So I'll leave you to that.
So yeah, my final thought would just be to kind of keep your eye on where the e-commerce industry is going. I think that there's going to be a lot of really cool things with AI and VR and that really change your experience. So I'm really excited to see, you know, what kind of innovations are happening there.
Yes.
And to get in touch with me. But thank you so much for having me, guys. This was great.
Aw, thank you so much for being here, Izzy. We love chatting with you. Thank you to everyone for listening. Check back next week for another great guest. Thank you so much, Abby, for being here.
Thank you, guys.
And this is April Franzino, and I'll see you next time.
This has been Beauty is Your Business, produced by Mouth Media Network. Copyright 2019.
Keep in touch on Instagram and Facebook at Mouth Media Network. And find prior episodes at beautyisyourbusiness.com and wherever the best podcasts are found. Your brand message can be on this show. Email us to find out more at podcast@mouthmedianetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
This is Mouth Media Network. Amplify and connect.